welcome to the 18th episode of Radio Thule, the Pan-Nordic podcast from nordiskradio.se. My name is Lukas Lindgren, and with me today are Andreas, Halvdan, and Tarje. Hello, guys.
Hi.
Good evening.
Hi.
Hi, yeah. For today's episode, we're going to talk about National Socialism, the biological worldview, pretty important text for all of us. And yeah, the thought is that we're going to just try to like describe the text, speak a bit about the author maybe, and talk about the foreword, and then just bring up some excerpts from the text, some parts about it that we like, and so on. Yeah, I can just start by saying that the text, National Socialism, the biological worldview, is written by a Danish author called Poul Riis Knudsen. And it was first published in Danish in 1987. Claes Lund was the first to translate it into Swedish. And it has been released in, I believe, like 2-3 different printings, with the last one in Swedish being in 2018. And it's also been published in Finnish and Norwegian also. And there's also a free edition on the internet in English by ironmarch.org. It's an Iron March publication. So if you just, if English-speaking listeners hear this, they can just Google National Socialism, the Biological Worldview, and there's an edition on archive. There's a foreword in the latest Swedish edition written by Simon Lindberg, and I'm going to just take up some points from that because I think it's pretty important for just understanding the text as a whole. The foreword goes into how this text was written over 30 years ago, and that means that like certain dates and certain references have shifted slightly, so millions more people have fallen victim to like specific wars or wars that he mentions in the text, and also that we hear in this call, and like nationalist organizations don't really take a stance on the controversy that led to the author, Riis Knudsen, leaving the DNSB. Instead, the re-release of the text is because of that it, in many respects, is thought-provoking, well-formulated, and interesting, as it says in the foreword by Simon. And another thing in the text, the biological worldview, is he mentions Christianity quite a lot, and that's a difference, at least between like the modern nationalist movements in the north and like the Nordic resistance movements and so on. And yeah, the NSDAP also was like officially in favor of positive Christianity. And yeah, the Nordic resistance movement, for example, is for freedom of religion and so on. But Poul Riis Knudsen is very anti-Christianity, but some of his points just in general around Christianity can be like, they are strong, but it can also be like thought-provoking. just regarding religion in general and Christianity and so on, even though a lot of people don't just agree on that. But people have personal views regarding that, but it's mostly like his general views around National Socialism that makes this text good. It has a pretty clear-cut package that makes the text like productive for understanding National Socialism in a quick way. That's the warning label out of the way. I don't know if you guys want to add anything before we just begin going into the text.
Trigger warnings.
Enough trigger. Yeah, I don't know if we have any Christians. Any of you guys are Christians? Because I mean, I won't start discussing it yet. But it could be interesting once we do get there to actually discuss it. Because his criticism of Christianity is also what he uses to criticize other things, right? So maybe some Christians have some points.
Yeah, and like the Nordic Resistance Movement, for example, uses the biological worldview as like an official text in their information package to new members, and the Nordic Resistance Movement has Christian members. It isn't that controversial.
No, I'm sure it's possible to see Christianity from a biological perspective as well, as a law of nature. But let's talk about that when we come to it, right?
Please.
Absolutely. I'm just gonna start right away. It has a pretty interesting start, this text, and that's quote: "As a National Socialist, you constantly experience the difficulty in carrying on a meaningful conversation with a non-National Socialist. You often feel that such a dialogue is outright impossible and that you live in two totally different worlds." This is the absolute beginning of the text. The text takes around 1 hour to read, but I just think that this opening passage is pretty telling.
It's pretty effective, like, to get the reader to connect to the text immediately, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something that we probably all felt.
For sure. Another passage that comes almost straight after is that National Socialism simply means an absolute, irrevocable, and an uncompromising fight against the very philosophical foundations of the entire ruling world order. And on the other page, quote, "National Socialism is far more than this. It is a worldview, a complete philosophy of life, covering all aspects of human existence." And that's the thing that this text does, is that it really tries to separate National Socialism from like regular ideologies, like regular politics, just regular like liberalism or Marxism and so on. It really tries to put National Socialism above that. And I remember when beginning to take an interest in nationalistic organizations and activities and so on. And I remember that this way of thinking about politics, as of now, 2026, I'm still like interested in ideology and like the specific inner workings of politics and other ideologies as well. But just this way of thinking about National Socialism, it gets you in the right mindset, if you know how I mean.
Yeah. National Socialism also, people say it's, or like the younger people say it's like old and cringe, whatever, but to me it's always felt forever fresh, you know, like you feel old at times. You don't know what the young people are doing anymore. Like, spoiler alert, I'm starting to become an old man. But with National Socialism, you never get that feeling. Like, it's always it always feels fresh.
Yeah, there's been some criticism within the at least Swedish nationalist movement. These people don't really call themselves nationalist anymore, not even that, but they can say that National Socialism is it's like a specific political strategy built on the streets of Germany in the 20s, and it's only built for just that specific situation, and right now we have to build a new ideology for a new situation and so on. But even just National Socialism, like the world, the word National Socialism itself, it was actually like coined by Rudolf Schlein, a Swedish guy, 1913. So like the concept has been there before. It's not just a German thing. And a thing that's also said on pages 2-3 on like the free English translation on the internet is, quote, "National Socialism is able to solve all practical problems in society by applying the principles of its fundamental philosophy, and its followers do not need any foreign elements to satisfy their spiritual needs. National Socialism itself gives a full answer to any question man may ask." And it's just that the concept behind National Socialism, it isn't just a specific old thing from Germany in the 20s. It's a much more general term, and it can be used in the modern age, and a lot of organizations have done that. And you can just look at, I don't know, the podcast War Strike, how they use National Socialism to reason on very like recent political topics, or very recent cultural topics, or how the Nordic Resistance Movement, for example, organizes right now in the Nordics. It's very possible to use National Socialism in 2026. Yeah, another thing that I like with the text is how it speaks about Marxism. The biological worldview, it doesn't only speak about National Socialism, but it hands out a bit of criticism both to Christianity, as we said, and to Marxism. And a pretty cool quote, at least according to me, is this one. "Both Marxism and National Socialism claim to be based on scientific truth. Marxism was invented behind a desk loaded with learned philosophical books, but without any contact with reality or science, for that matter. At a closer look, Marxism is just as much based on faith as any religion, namely on the completely unscientific belief that all biological beings who walk on two legs and don't have feathers are created equal, and the just as absurd idea that it is the conditions of production that have determined history in the same way as it is claimed to be the environment and not heredity that determines the development of the individual." And I think just this passage describes Marxism in a really accurate way. When you think about Marxism, it really is this like behind the desk construction, just Jews having to think something up to handle the situation in Russia then and just the working conditions being bad. They have to figure something up to not get a program on them.
Well, I mean, if you know what Karl Marx did, I mean, it's a very accurate description. He was behind a desk all his life. He was a very sick man, and he had to get a free room from someone because he couldn't provide. And very, very, very correct.
I read somewhere that someone described communism as trying to pretend that greed doesn't exist at all in human, and capitalism is when you let the greed run everything in society. Both lead to catastrophe. The greed is something that exists within every human, but it has to be controlled somewhat.
Yeah, exactly. And not to get to the real boomer takes, but just the argument that Marxism really hasn't worked, or it hasn't been applied in the way that they say it should be applied. It doesn't really work out most of the times, and the times that it has worked out, like maybe some East Asian countries right now, for that's because they almost use like National Socialist principles. But like if we look at Juche in North Korea, it's really fascist in some ways. But the communist countries today aren't really like before. The Jewish influence has been lowered quite a bit, but communism, as was theorized in the beginning by Jews, that theory wasn't really applied practically, according to me at least. Another thing that I really like with this text is how he criticizes the Allied powers, and he speaks of 1945, I believe, quite a few times. He at least mentions the date and how that date really changed the world in its workings, and how societies work and so on. A pretty good excerpt on page 5, according to me, is this one, quote, "Anonymously, they refer to National Socialism as the gospel of evil, while they themselves rule over a world on the brink of economic and moral disaster. A world afflicted by inflation, unemployment, crime, senseless violence, drug abuse, pollution, pornography, corruption, hunger, and ecological catastrophes. A world that has experienced only 16 days of peace since 1945, and where 30 million people have been butchered over the same period. And over this dreary world hovers the dreadful threat of a nuclear war that will destroy all higher life on Earth." This excerpt is really good, and how he speaks about the Allied powers is really good for getting the reader to understand how the liberal West, always in its propaganda, it promises to be so good, so righteous, and full of democracy and just peace, but on the other hand, it supports like the US and Israel and genocide and just the most evil things that man can understand.
Well, they've been kind of getting away with it up until now.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's pretty clear for the world to see, like they're kidnapping presidents and bombing kids in Gaza and how many wars is Israel having, like, on 7 fronts now, I think. It's and also the rules basis of the order is just bullshit. Like, Netanyahu can go freely wherever he wants to, even if he's wanted from the by the International Criminal Court. Like, he's been totally vindicated.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, there's so much hypocrisy if you just look at all the democratic mass murders. It feels like Truman, Churchill, Roosevelt, the terror bombing of German cities, the atom bombs over Japan, George W. Bush, and the 1 million dead civilian Iraqis, a war that was fought in the name of democracy. So they have, and a lot of people just, they understand subconsciously that the world order isn't completely good. As fast as when news come of the US doing something new, in the warlike direction, regular people are often pretty fast to send out memes about oil and spreading freedom and so on. And they do it in a pretty fun way and just jokingly. But the horrible thing about it is that they actually they do it for real, and they do it because of evil.
Mm.
Another
the one American politician said once that the international law is only for our enemies. When someone argued that George W. Bush should be put in the Hague for killing 1 million civilians in Iraq, which just shows that these international laws, from their perspective, is just something to make their enemies the weaker, while they can just ignore it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Probably the same with the Geneva Convention in the Second World War.
Exactly.
Yeah. Another excerpt that I like a bit later in the text on page 13 is, quote, "A society consisting of a random medley of races, religions, and philosophies is most certainly not an expression of spiritual and cultural wealth. It is often claimed today. It is an absurd hodgepodge whose existence cannot be justified on any grounds. A certain indication of the imminent disintegration of the nation and a total dissolution of all norms and values."
Yeah, and that was 40 years ago, right? So
Yeah.
So that was just when they had some Turkish guest workers that they probably thought were leaving soon, but...
yeah, exactly. So
but I mean, it's come to pass. I mean, even the biggest boomers now, they're thinking on ethno-national terms. You can see the new party that was just formed. They have over 100,000 members in the UK. I think that's the direction of most of Europe, right? Ethno-centric parties for sure.
Yeah, and so he has had the ability to see into the future in a pretty impressive way.
Hitler does it as well.
A lot of national, like the whole nationalistic movement since like the 70s, 80s has done the same. There's been some drama in Sweden today regarding the Nordic resistance movement. And renting places where they can have their meetings, and then the media trying to the media and the ones so owning the house and so on, trying to stop the resistance movement and just whining about it on the internet, where the where regular people on like social media, like completely regular people, support, or maybe not support in that way, but they criticize and question the arguments used by the regular media and so on, and the lies and so on. And
can you elaborate a bit more on that? Because I thought that was a thing that happened every year, where there was like this dance where, you know, the Nordic resistance movement tried to book things, and then they'd come up with excuses and the media would write about it after. But there's a bit more talk about it this year.
No, the thing is that in this specific case, it's a place that's been rented for like a pretty long time. So it's been and it usually goes in that way, that a place can be rented for quite a time. And that's because the specific person renting out that place likes the people. They probably know of it, but they don't care, because most people aren't political in that way, or they just don't care. But if it goes long enough, maybe it takes like 1, 2, 3 years, or just 6 months. But if it goes long enough, someone in nearby might get information about it, and then they can take it to the media. And the thing is that that person that rents out and likes the people from the resistance movement or some other organization, they have to stop because of media, because media and the police and leftists and so on will give the organization that rents out problems, or them specifically, the one who rents out problems in their personal life and so on.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about all those migrant hotels in the UK and how much backlash, they just keep going. I guess the money's really a lot sweeter.
Yeah. There, right? Yeah. But in this case, where regular people just didn't understand the article that the lying media put out at all, I just went in and wrote some comment defending the resistance movement and just being a nationalist overall, and then some woman wanted me to try to defend Nazism, and I just said that Swedish Nazis since the 70s have been right about the about what has happened in Sweden, about the criminality and just the decay that has happened in society. They could see it from afar. They could see it 40, 30 years in the future, as this quote on page 13 that Knudsen made, that a society consisting of a random medley of races, religions, and philosophies is most certainly not an expression of spiritual and cultural wealth, as it is often claimed today. She didn't really have any answer to that at all. That's an easy way to just argue for nationalist socialism, is that national socialists have been right. They have been correct. It's not just Erik Stryker being able to predict specific things on a 1-2 year basis. Like, national socialists overall have been able to predict the evolution of society since 45 in a very accurate way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's in a shorter term what convinced me to start calling myself a national socialist. Like, for 20 years, people were in my mind, they were saying crazy stuff, and fast forward 10 years and it's a reality. So what's going on here?
Well, that's impressive. I mean, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance that you need to get over before that, right? I mean, there's so much so much, you know, the whole world order is built on it, as Knudsen said, the post 45 world order. There's a lot of mental work that needs to be done, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then people might say, like, yeah, but life in the West is still pretty good. And it's good compared to how it maybe was in the 1800s, and we're rich compared to a lot of the world, and we have it good and so on. And that's true to some extent it is. I have a pretty good life materially and so on, but that's material wealth created by white people. It's like my ancestors have created material wealth.
Yeah, but you could also make the in very simple way make the argument that it's actually shit. Like how many women are eating some kind of,
yeah,
what's it called in English, like SSRI depression pills, happy pills,
antidepressants.
Mm. Yeah, isn't it like 20% like all the time, and like if you look over time, like maybe 80% of them.
Yeah.
I don't know if Danes have beaten you there, but yeah.
But if you just look at it, it's when you look at it deep enough and you look at the details, it's often like the good things in society are created by white people who mean well. All the bad things in society is created by Zionists. It's mostly just that.
And let's talk like Rich Knudsen here. It's not just good people; it's the best of good people, right? It's always the smartest and the top percentage that pushing society forward. That's what he argues in his book. So yeah,
it's like the men in the U.S. who put people on the moon. That was like the goyest of goys. It was the best white people.
Did you add a disclaimer that we'd be talking about the moon as well?
Yeah, I was just thinking that's the most controversial.
People writing in now.
yeah. No, but just the there is good things in the world, and in the good things in the West is created by white people. To a very very high degree. And so on. Yeah.
And it's so important to preserve as well. Also something you mentioned, which was like all the culture and all the morality and things like that, these are all constructs, these can all be fixed later. But if you mess up your genetics by mixed breeding or whatever, finding the wrong woman, you're gonna end up with, all your descendants are gonna be messed up forever, right? There's gonna be that break in the line. So remember that.
Yeah.
Mm.
He does have a passage, right, about like non-whites and so on, and in a pretty good way. That isn't like it's not T&D-esque. It's just a regular view of different cultures. It's just that the ones who rule the world right now, they want to mix and destroy every culture. The enemies of white people today aren't just enemies of white people. They're enemies of the whole world. They maybe specifically target white people right now, and have done in the past, and use non-whites as tools to destroy white people. But that's only because white people have been the dominating force of the world and are the biggest opponent to the Zionists and so on.
Yeah. I have a question. It's related to the book as well. We're talking a lot about white people, but he also mentioned animals and breeding and things like that. But how much should just a regular Dane or a Finn or Swede or Norwegian, how much should they be thinking about? Should they just go out and find any random white woman? How much is it more important that we're having a lot of babies, or should we be waiting for the right woman? How important is thinking about this at this point in history, right? The National Socialists, they had huge movements where they were breeding the best with the best.
It depends on the options you have. When you rule society, you can do as you like, and you can use different techniques, but we don't really have the possibility for that right now. Jews and Zionists overall have, they've like destroyed the dating market, at least since like the 2010s. And society overall, and the relations between men and women are pretty bad. I would just say, go with your instinct and go for white people. I don't really see how it would be productive to be a complete autist and just, because the modern dating market is already very nitpicky, you know, and very specific and so on. So it just, it doesn't really feel productive to be, to just see that, try to like find the perfect match, because in this modern age, like, men don't need women and women don't really need men. So even though you think you've like found the complete 100% match, society is made in the way that there's really no guarantee that they will stay with you or vice versa. If in the times before, you had an obligation to each other, you couldn't really separate in the same way that you have today, so nothing is guaranteed. But if some specific person, I don't know, has the appearance and has the possibility to really pick and choose, like, absolutely. But I would say just go for white people and go for your instincts.
Okay.
Someone on Radio Nordfront said, the Swedish show said, just like have white babies and leave them here and there. They'll be fine.
Will they be fine?
He said it. It wasn't me that said it. But I basically like agree with it.
Yeah. Okay. So even people in, like, you know, the Nordic resistance movement, it's a vanguard movement, right? You know, having kids is a big investment. We should, like, members of such vanguard movements, they should also be having a family and things like that, right? That's the position. Okay, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. The last quote that I had was on page 16 in the English version, and that's, quote, nationalism without socialism is absurd, and the other way around, socialism without a clearly defined community has no meaning. And the thing with this text that makes it so good for like new people getting into nationalism overall is that this text really is rightoid destroyer, with like these quotes that nationalism without socialism is absurd and the other way around. So it really covers in all aspects that are important for not getting poisoned ideologically, in an ideological way, and just the, and socialism without a clearly defined community has no meaning. That's a pretty obvious criticism against Marxism, where they go for the thing that workers of the world unite, and if you look at like China or North Korea, they don't really do that anymore. So
No, it looks like mostly Chinese and North Korean workers.
Yeah, Han Chinese and North Koreans.
Yeah, even that, like the Uyghurs can sit in their camps and eat bacon.
Yeah, exactly. They have a really racial view, and it's just natural, so it happens by itself. So the only ones who can do this, like workers of the world unite, it's Jews. And when the influence of the Jews disappear, like when it maybe disappears a bit from communism to like the US and they find their new home in the West. If the influence goes down in like North Korea or China, just racial policies or just the racial thinking overall, it comes pretty naturally.
Yeah, but another way of thinking about it's kind of a cliche in the nationalist scene to talk about the people as an extension of the family. But like you have socialism in the family, you also need to have socialism within the people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like it's just as absurd to let like a group within your people like starve because, I don't know, they're not productive enough or something like that. It's letting your children starve for not bringing in money.
Yeah, and it's just the natural way of for white people to be socialists. It's just how we've done things historically. That doesn't mean that we have to like steal people's wheat bags that they have hidden under the floorboards and make them starve. It's not that kind of socialism.
No.
It's in the world. It's in the world. It's being social. Humans are a social animal and we build like, and tribes and so on.
It doesn't mean either that anyone from society can just like freeload and be a total asshole and not have any consequences for it. Within everything within reason, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And if we look at in the European and like European societies historically, they have been very hierarchical. There's been like people with more power and less, and even slave societies and so on. But within the people, there's been it's been a sense of community and just surviving in the northern Europa really takes a form of natural socialism, national socialism. Yeah, he also speaks or writes about like the whole Midas right thing and justice and the conception of justice and why we must take care of the weaker and so on. So yeah. Does anybody have anything else they want to bring up specifically from the text?
There was one thing he talked a bit about. He had like a really 80s take where he talked about national socialists, they want to protect the environment, right? I think that's something that a lot of non-national socialists, they'll be a bit surprised about. But he talks about nuclear power, and he seems to be very much against it, which surprised me a little bit. Because I've actually been warming a bit up to nuclear power recently because, I've seen a lot of how much waste comes from a lot of the so-called green energy and, what's happening in the fields where it's getting mined to make, these battery panels. And I wonder what your opinion with this is, because he says anything that will last 1,000 years and poison our children's children, that's not national socialist, which I agree with, but it's relatively safe. I don't know. I was just a bit surprised by that. What's your guys' opinions on it?
I think this comes maybe from like the Chernobyl disaster, where you see how this can go wrong in like an explosion disaster where this radioactive waste gets spread all over with the wind, etc. So I understand where it's coming from, but with the technology, but with the technology we have today, it is mostly pretty safe.
Yeah. Okay. It was the same year then, was it? Was it also? It was 87. This book was written and
Chernobyl was 86. Yeah.
One year after.
That kind of makes a bit of sense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, Soviet nuclear power.
Yeah. Okay. So that's maybe an example of a thing that's very 80-ish. And if we look at today, what kind of people that advocate for like green energy and so on in the way and take it a bit too far, and maybe the consequences that green energy in the way that they do it have for the environment and so on. So yeah, the technological aspect of society has evolved pretty quick. But the principles green of caring for the environment, they are still there. It's just that the specific technologies have shifted in how they affect the world. So, yeah.
But it's a really hard question because, you know, we are consumers, right? To survive, we suck energy from the earth. Everything we do, it takes away from the earth. And you know, we can be somewhat sustainable, you know, but, you know, it's very difficult. It's something I think a lot about. Yeah, it's really hard. But yeah, I agree with it to an extent. And then how much, you know, how much does it conflict with, you know, when you're fighting for your people's survival as well, you know, when the Germans were fighting the Second World War, you know, the amount of bombs and destruction.
Yeah. But that's just a thing of being human. We affect the environment and not always in good ways. But it becomes pretty hypocritical when, like, I sometimes see online, like, leftists and, just weak people overall saying things like, humans shouldn't exist, we shouldn't have any more babies, we should just die. And then I can just say to them, just you first, kill yourself. That's really hypocritical because you are alive, you are eating, you are breathing, you are existing. You want brown people to get into Europe. And so it's like you support Jews and so on. So it's just hypocritical going too far.
It seems like some laws of nature supersede, right? So there's like a hierarchy of these natural laws as well. So like the law of preservation, that's like at the tip top, maybe.
Yeah. It's just the thing of being a biological organism.
Yeah.
Okay. We want to survive and multiply. We can't get away from that. It's such a natural thing. And yeah, the thing is that our brains have evolved to the degree that our want of surviving and evolving and multiplying can affect the environment. But National Socialism has the most like realistic and best way of countering that, and the best way of like seeing our relationship towards nature and the environment.
I mean, the first step is like it's understanding it, right, and then seeing it for what it is. You can't make a change if you don't even do that. So I definitely see your point. Yeah.
We have to understand it first, and then look at it realistically, and look at what type of beings are we. Not just being a 40-year-old, childless woman, a leftist, Jew lover who talks online about not having children and just putting yourself in a gas chamber and just killing yourself, but not doing it yourself, just talking about it. So that just becomes weird.
I think the blue-black movement is basically promising like lowered standards of living in their party program, at least temporarily.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough, yeah.
But I, or maybe standards of living is the wrong way of putting it, but like less unnecessary consumption, which I would be prepared to agree with. Like this, it's the way we're living now is unsustainable.
I mean, I agree, but and then you come to the democratic problem, right? You know, they're never going to be voted in with such a party program, in my opinion, because, you know, the people can't think that far, the masses, right? Yeah, it's a very difficult one. In Denmark right now, we have we have a thing that's a bit controversial, the Fødevarecheck, which is like the, because we have so high inflation, a lot of people are having trouble with buying food, especially old people and things. So they've found people within a specific tax bracket, they're getting a payment of 2,500 crowns. So now there's a lot of fighting on who gets the check and why. And, you know, the blue parties, they're saying, oh, it's going to cause more inflation. And the reds are saying, we need money, more money here and there. And it's election year. And so, yeah, it's a bit of a mess.
Oh, so they're handing out free money during the election year.
yeah. It's a tried and true method. Maybe the blue... The blue-black movement can consider that over there less. Yeah.
Yeah, but maybe their slogan can be that they'll take your money.
I'm sure they'll get voted on. Okay. I actually had one more thing that I was wondering as well. Like, you know, there's all this talk about the natural laws. You know, this whole book, it's a bit... you know, it's like the fundamental of everything is that it's based on natural laws, and that's why it's right? That's what the whole book is based on. How do I tap in? Like, what is, and you know, how do I get a good feel like what a natural law is? Because sometimes I feel like I'm so removed from it. You know, what how do I get to my baser instinct and actually get a really good understanding of what these natural laws are?
I would just say science. That's how I see it. But I think people see it in different ways. You can either see it like more materialistic or more like metaphysical and so on. And some things in this text, I believe, get a bit cheeky. Like the Savitri Devi quote. It's not bad. I just think it's a bit cheeky. Like when it says, it's a quote from The Lighting and the Sun, the book. It ultimately expresses the mysterious and unfailing wisdom according to which nature lives and creates. The impersonal wisdom of the primal forest and of the ocean depths and of the spheres in the dark fields of space. And it's Adolf Hitler's glory not merely to have gone back to that divine wisdom, but to have made it the practical regeneration policy of worldwide scope. So it's like, yeah, I agree in some way, but it's just it can be pretty abstract. And I can see why you don't really why it's pretty hard to grasp. Sometimes, but what I would say is just that it's specific. It's specific scientific theories, and theories in the scientific world is something that is proven. But just like evolution, or even if you don't believe in evolution, if somebody doesn't do that in a nationalistic sphere, but like the thought of us as biological beings and how we see just biological things. But I would say like just evolution and just science, using science in a realistic way, because science is understanding that we are creatures that want to survive and evolve, and that's what we do, and it's from there that our want to for our race and our family and our children and our friends and so on to survive. It's just a human thing. What the scientists do is that they maybe use like wants and behaviors that we want, but they use it in a way that goes against our biological wants. So like the want to watch porn is a biological want. It's the want to do that is created in our brains through evolution. But it's the one to have sex, but the scientists contort that to something that's bad,
Yeah, and some marketing and
and with every other vice that they do and so on. So it's just looking at it at a scientific way, and that's maybe where I don't agree with the Christianity part, because he sees Christianity as unscientific, and it is unscientific in like the very specific parts, like Jesus rose from the dead, went up to heaven, or like he rose from the dead, he was on earth for like 3 days, and then he rose up to the Father, stuff like that. He walked on water, he made water into vine, he like had one fish and one piece of bread, and then he multiplied it into like an extreme amount and gave it to all his people and so on. So that parts are unscientific, but it's just, I just see it, that's how people understood the material world before science. But I still believe that Christian people throughout history, if we look at Europe, have acted in a scientific way. Like when Christian people, I don't know, killed Jews when they behaved wrong. That's pretty scientific. Some other part is trying to destroy my biological wants. And then there's a program. That's scientific. But then they maybe didn't understand science in the way that we understand science since like the 19th century and so on. That's another thing. But that's how I would describe it, at least.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. Should it be used as, like, is it more like a guiding principle, or should we just be like every question just say, okay, is it according to nature or not? For example, I'm a vegetarian. I've been vegetarian for many, many years. I get this argument a lot that it's just natural to eat meat. But for me, it just feels wrong. Is that, am I in the wrong there? Or what? Because from my perspective, we're not getting into a vegetarian thing, but this is my it's like, you know, the way that factory farming and things, it's very unnatural to the way meat is made this day. So I don't know, maybe that's an argument for following the natural laws. I don't know.
It isn't really black and white, and it's a pretty complex discussion, but I'm for eating meat. I like eating meat, and I recommend people eating meat. I think you feel better eating meat, but a lot of people are vegetarians. Like there's
like Hitler.
Like Hitler. Like, I don't know, Warren Baylow and War Strike. I know people in the resistance movement who are vegetarians and so on. So it's a thing, but and everything we do isn't like, it isn't like natural. And if you just, and there's so many different ways of looking at what's natural. So if you just, you are probably going to become crazy if you just have that view of it all the time and try to find a specific way. But it's just, it's like the principles, and then and just the morality. I think morality in some way is natural, but it's the thing we, it's like your want to be a vegetarian and your critique of the meat industry right now, that I believe personally that that's an evolutionary want to like do good, and your morality is evolutionary in the way that we want our environment and the and like the milieu around us to be good. It's just a want, and you are obviously still alive and able to reason, and
I think
you're reasonably healthy.
We'll let the viewer decide that if I can reason. Maybe not.
No, but you're still like, you're still you still do what you need to do as a human, so you're still being natural. But it's just the thing with this whole naturalistic thing, it's just believing that science is correct. And by science is correct, I don't mean that like specific studies are correct, like this study on the vaccine or this thing on global warming. It's just the scientific method, that Europeans came up with, just this this logical view of the world, seeing us as biological organisms and just understanding our environment with the scientific method. It's just that. Then we can, the specifics, we can always it's as they say, a lot of nationalists say, when we free our people and rule our societies again, we can nitpick about these specific things how much we, as much as we want. We can do like specific studies done by national socialists to find out exactly how it is. But right now, we have a lot of like personal beliefs, but it's just, you have to see it in contrast to what our political enemies do. Like, even if we here might have different views on exactly how to eat or exactly how to behave or exactly how many children you should have or exactly how you should raise children or like how you should date people or act with people, these specific parts, we can have discussions about them and we don't probably agree 100%. But if we look at our political enemies that don't want to have children at all, they want to destroy the white race. We have Zionists who create all sort of like bad things, like, I don't know, gambling and just race mixing propaganda, movies and films that are just completely disgusting, like this modern, like destructive, really bad art. If we compare, even with our differences, if we compare ourselves to them, then we are all natural. It's just that.
Yeah, I don't have a... I think you summarized it pretty well, but I know... I don't think you can... We are able to break the natural laws for a longer time now, but I think the punishment is going to be even harder when it... It's like damming up a river. Like, one day the dam is going to crack. It's going to be a lot worse the longer you have a dam there.
Yeah. And if we look at our like political enemies right now, it's that their wants and needs are biological, but the thing is that they are tricked by the rulers of this world. It's just, if we look at white women who feel sorry for immigrants or who adopt, I don't know, like some child from Africa or so on, they have biological instincts. It's just that Zionist propaganda distorts it. So all people are biological. It's just that we are logical in a way that we see that both our political enemies and us, we have biological needs. It's just that we can see that our biological needs and how we act upon them are logical in the way that they actually reach the end goal. We see the end goal and we know what's supposed to be reached. Our political enemies and just regular people overall, they're being tricked.
But it seems like more and more people are becoming more detached from their biology, though, as well. I mean, for me, the transgender movement seemed to be like the start of something very dark, some where people are medicated and cut off from the source, like a bit like maybe Christians would call, like, you know, where you're possessed by demons. But, you know, these people are changing their sex and their organs. And
I would see it in the same way that if you put like a bear in a very tight cage, or just animals overall, they can often show stress behaviors. So in some like really bad zoos, you can see some animals like walking back and forth, or maybe like, I don't know, chewing on themselves or just hurting themselves. It's just self-harm and stuff like that. It's just, that the environment is destroying them.
Killing their babies also happens.
But you don't think this is like, you know, because there is a big technocratic movement these days. You know, they want to kill anything to do with biology. They want to integrate with technology completely and destroy it, right?
Yeah, but I would say it in its source, it's still like a evolutionary need to evolve. Because like technology right now is a tool, and it's a tool for survival. And just when other people in society start using technology, you also have to start using it, because then you aren't really put in a good situation. It's like Vitvarg Vikenesen being completely tribal, while the world around you is technological.
So
it's a want, but I would say National Socialism is that, like this technocratic movement and so on. It's just, we can understand that their wants is to evolve, and it's a biological want, but we can see logically that the way they are doing it is in the long term counterproductive.
It
won't fulfill their biological needs.
Interesting. I didn't think of it like that, as it was.
And one thing to look at it, it just look at the source. Is it Jews doing it? Then it's probably for destroying your biological soul. It's just that a lot of this is probably gonna get bleeped because Sweden, you know. But a lot of these really fucked up things, like these really disgusting and just weird things, it's just contorting and toxifying biological needs, in a way. It's propaganda and wealth and power and so on, really. And just it's just manipulation. Everybody can be manipulated in all ways. That was a pretty deep discussion, actually.
Yeah.
Does anybody have anything else from the book or anything want to bring up or so?
I'm interested about the Finnish Somalis. What have they been getting up to?
Finnish Somalis, actually, nothing out of the ordinary. It's just eyes on the water so they can't drown, and things are closed. And
they're waiting for winter to be over.
Yeah. They're just like a bear. They go into hiding during winter.
All
right, excellent. Then we're all caught
up. Spring is actually my favorite time of the year, and summer, at least spring. But it's not just me who wakes to life. It's all the brown people too. So I'm not alone.
For the next episode, should we cover his other book, The National Socialism, a Left-Wing Movement?
Yeah, we have it. We've actually thought about it. We want to do that book sometime in the future. Maybe next episode, or maybe some other time in the future. But absolutely, because that book specifically, it was a long time ago I read it, and I don't know it as good as The Biological Worldview. His other book is a bit forgotten, I would say. I guess you others agree with me, because that I just haven't seen that book in the same way. I don't think I even knew it existed to like a few years ago, maybe, or something like that.
I heard about it on War Strike.
Yeah. I think, you know, so too. Yeah, and I've seen it before, because it's mentioned in the same situation as The Biological Worldview, but it's not as famous. Absolutely not in the same way.
No, The Biological Worldview is kind of like an addition to Mein Kampf, like standard literature for National Socialists. But the other book is kind of more provocative and, you know, maybe toxic to certain people.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's important, at least in this time and age, where the Zionists have... with the vibe shift and so on.
Well, they're trying to stoke this left versus right bullshit again.
Yeah. I am actually looking at the text on archive. It was pretty easy to Google. It doesn't seem to be that long either. It's just...
No, it's not very long.
It seems to be shorter than The Biological Overview. And... I actually met Knudsen, and he's been pretty active, despite his age.
How old is he?
I believe he's 76, right?
Wasn't he born in 49? I don't know.
I think I googled him. He says 77. That's 1941. Yeah, so he's very, very active in that way. But that's very telling of The Biological Worldview, that a lot of the things, especially he writes a lot about Christianity, and if we talk about the Nordic Resistance Movement, it's a completely different view than, like, we agree on some parts and we understand what he means. It's like, it's not that we're like... disagreeing completely, it's just that we see it in a different way, but we understand the principle. But it says a lot about the text that even though a pretty big part of it is against like the official standard of the resistance movement, but the resistance movement still uses the text in an official way, and that's very telling that the text is really good and it's an easy read and it's very all-encompassing and so on. Because I understand, I remember like when the resistance movement was a lot bigger in like 2017-18, I remember just seeing The Biological Worldview and seeing the author, and the author being a Dane and a person I didn't recognize at all, and I just thought, why does the Swedish movement lift up this book so much, or this text that isn't even written by a member or a Swede at all? And I later came to understand that it was because the text was good. So it says a lot that an organization lifts up a text so much that isn't even written by a member, and where they have to say in the foreword that just mentioned the controversy and so on, and that they don't agree with all views, but the text is just so good that they want to have it anyway. But that's all that I had. Do you guys have anything more you want to add?
No, I'm
no, no.
Put up on the Somalis, and we had a good discussion.
Getting up to something interesting next month, who knows. But we'll be back in March, and we'll try to speak about national like a left-wing movement, his other book, National Socialism, a Left-Wing Movement by Knudsen also. So we'll try to speak about that one, and we'll maybe have some interesting news that we can bring up too. But that would be all. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next month. Bye, all.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.